This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 12, Spinners and Shot Puts. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the role of spinners in 2020 and how that's also influencing longer formats of the game. We help a young batsman decide what kind of batting stance that he wants, and we help a young bowler decide whether he can use a shot put to bowl faster. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Once again, you join us for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, the greatest audio guide to helping you play and coach better cricket, no matter what standard you're at the moment. My name is David Hinchliffe. I am the chief of Pitch Vision Academy, and part of my remit there, of course, is to present this show. But I couldn't do it without Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Welcome back, Garrows.
Hi, David. I'm sure you could do it without me. I think that's probably a bit over the top, but it's great to be here nonetheless.
It would drop from a 9 out of 10 podcast to a 6 out of 10 podcast.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. It's very kind of you to say that I'm worth 3, so that's good.
You're worth 3, yes. Three more.
Or maybe 2.5, depending on how good your maths is.
Later on, we've got Berners coming on the show to do his roving report. So Berners is off around the world again, so that will be quite exciting when we hear from him. But for now, I wanted to talk about an article that came up on the Pitch Vision Academy website recently, and it was talking about spinners, the role of spinners, especially in 2020, and how they dominate at the top level, and whether you can extrapolate that kind of information down to school and academy and club level. And it was an interesting article from Lavers. Lavers is not here to tell us a bit more about it, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it, Garrows. When it comes to spinners, picking spinners and deciding on whether to go with a spinner or a seamer, what kind of factors do you work into your selection process?
Well, I'd always play them first and foremost, because the stats are significantly slanted towards spin being impactful. Not more so than seam necessarily, but certainly worth having in the side. But also, one of the things that comes out, and it depends on where you're playing around the world, and obviously we're looking at the tournament over in Bangladesh at the moment, where spin is playing an increasing role as we go through the 3 weeks of the event, which you sort of expect from the amount of where the pitches have had. And I know that most of the pitches are only getting a couple of games on them, but because of the small amount of stadiums, they're actually playing on maybe the pitch next to the one that's been played on a couple of days later. And of course, there's been a lot of traffic up and down that, which has brought the spinners into play as well. And as the wickets are slowed up, which they generally have over this tournament, spins come into it. But it actually plays a role in the Northern Hemisphere as well. And certainly when we won the T20 in 2005, I had Ian Blackwell was my main spinner, who was a very experienced spinner, but more of a batter, I suppose, than a spinner. I had a guy called Aral Sapaya, who bowled 2 or 3 overs. Graham Smith bowled two overs occasionally. Wow. And Wes Durston bowled a few overs as well. But we didn't have what you'd call a world-class spinner in our midst, but we were very keen to take pace off of the ball and to set our fields accordingly. And I think that's what every team does nowadays. So it doesn't mean to say that you have to have a Warner, a Muralitharan or a Mishra or any of those guys playing for you. I think normal spin can be pretty effective as well.
And that is because the lead is being taken from international cricket, where economy rates for spinners tend to be lower than economy rates of seamers, medium pacers and faster bowlers. Do you think that translates directly into the more recreational side of the game?
Well, I think it could do, but I think the more interesting stats actually is when you break the game down into three bits. So you break the game down into the power play overs, into the middle eight, and then into the death period. And that's where it gets really, really interesting to see where you can deploy spinners best, rather than just saying that the flat stats for a seamer are better or worse than the flat stats for a spinner. I think you can break it down and actually work out when is the best time to bowl spin, as opposed to just bowling lots of spin during a 2020 game. And I think that has relevance for the club game. And I know from watching some club cricket in the 2020 and club cricket over the last few years, there's been an increase in the number of spinners that are bowling within the power play. There's more of an understanding of when you bowl them in the middle and maybe even utilising them towards the end as well. So I think it's a bigger thing is when do you use them, as much as, you know, just having spin and utilising that across the 20 overs. And that's definitely happening within club cricket. I'd be interested to find out whether that's done purely because it's following a trend, as you said, from the leading teams in the game, the international teams, and in the IPL and various other competitions, or whether that's being driven by experience or even the most basic analysis. And I don't know the answer to that, but it's great to see spin being utilised in different ways.
And then, how does that translate into the longer format in terms of, again, the club game and the school game, where the format tends to be 40 or 50 overs and doesn't really go much beyond that, apart from if you're playing in grade cricket in Australia or South Africa perhaps. But just talking about the limited over game specifically, how do you think that translates? Do you think that the role of spinners is being appreciated more at that level because the 20 over stuff is seen as such a powerful tool, having a spinner, even if it's just a part-time spinner?
I do. I think that there's been a real increase in the respect, I suppose, from about spin, not just from the way that it's played or the way that it's bowled, but more importantly by captains. And I think the 2020 game has helped to increase the understanding of how you can you can utilize spin over the course of 50 overs, 40 overs, or even longer into multi-day cricket. And you know, we were going through a stage that unless you could do magical things like a Muralitharan or a Warne, that you weren't really any good. And the great thing was that 2020 came along, but also somebody like Swanee came along, you know, who effectively bowled off-spin and slightly different versions of off-spin and was incredibly successful. And that's been heartening for me because we went through a stage that if you couldn't bowl mystery balls, you weren't any good. And that to me was a poor stage of development of cricket around the world. So yeah, 2020 has been crucial because it's shown that actually you can be very subtle in what you deliver, even if you've just got one ball, and you can be successful across any length of overs.
So there's definitely a scope for the occasional man to slip in a couple of overs, even if it's in a longer format, in a 50 over game, when you think, well, if I can sneak two overs from my part timer, that gives me two overs towards the end of my better bowlers.
Completely right. And also, just think back, and I can speak from my own experience, how many times has that seventh bowler come on and got your wicket? Whether it be somebody else's or, in my case, my wicket quite regularly. And I think most people listening to this show will be able to relate to the fact that somebody's come on that you thought might be a batter who bowls a bit, and all of a sudden they pick up twofer, or they stop the scoring just because they're doing something slightly different, or they're bowling it at a different pace. And then you sky one up in the air, and then you're walking off to the embarrassment of getting out to a lesser bowler. But it does happen, you know, as I get constantly reminded whenever I go to Ventnor Cricket Club, I once got out to a bloke with black trainers and a belt on, so they forget the good innings that I might have played every now and again, and always go back to that instance. But anybody who can bowl can get a wicket, and I think, you know, batters are now bowling more overs, aren't they? You look at Maxwell. I mean, how good a cricketer in 2020 cricket is Maxwell now? You can smack it out of the park. He took a fantastic catch yesterday against Bangladesh, but he can also get out two, three overs, which takes the pressure off the seamers at the other end.
I think it was, speaking of getting out to someone who you shouldn't get out to, and always being wary of the man in the black trainers, certainly never two to him in the field either.
Correct.
I think it was Robin Martin Jenkins who said he was always very reluctant to play in charity games because there was no doubt that he would get out to the guy who bowled the double bouncer, and he just completely missed it and gets bowled around his legs.
Correct, and I can sympathise with Robin on that one because it's happened to me. But also, he wasn't particularly good at playing little wicket keepers that bowled skiddy away swing with three slips and a gully as well, from my memory, because I only ever bowled one ball at him.
That's all you need. Well, hopefully that's revealed a little bit more about spin bowling in modern cricket, and there's some ideas for people who perhaps have stuck to old, tried and trusted formulas in the past. Maybe that's given them some ideas to use spinners in different ways in their coming season, whether they're just going into their winter in the southern hemisphere or just going into their summer in the northern hemisphere. Right, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. So, Gareth, if you're ready, I will be in charge of the questions this week. First question. The LBW law should be changed to allow balls pitching outside the leg stump to be given out.
No.
Yes. Second question. Fielding is a young man's game.
No.
No. Third question. More information breeds more clarity.
No.
No. And speaking of questions, of course, it's this time every week that we delve into the mailbag and get a couple of readers' questions. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can find out a bit more by heading over to pitchvision.com/academy. And you can send in your question to us through that page, or you can email us on coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll have more contact details up at the end of the show. So, the questions this week, a couple of good ones have been sent in, and the first one is from Anaf. Anaf is a new question asker, and we always enjoy them. And he says, I'm a 13-year-old batsman, and I play for my school team. We have a coach who isn't good at fixing our problems or teaching new techniques. When I'm batting, I stand with a wide stance. My school coach tells me to stand with the orthodox stance. I'm not fast at moving my feet, so I stand with a wide stance. What should I do? And Gareth, I know you've written about this in the past, wide stance and the more orthodox stance, shoulder width apart. Where do you stand with someone who feels like he wants to have a wider stance, but his coach is telling him to do otherwise?
Well, I'd side with the player, actually. There's a reason why he wants to stand with a wider stance, and that's his preference. He's 13 years old, and I like the fact that he's asking these questions at this stage, because some of these brilliant coaches that I work with now, one of their main mottos is that you should listen to your body and not everybody. And it sounds to me as Anaf is actually doing that. He's listening to what he wants to do rather than necessarily going down the route of the school coach, who, because of his experience within the game and he's probably been on courses that have told him to do exactly this, wants you to get into an orthodox stance. So I would always go with the player and the player who listens to his body. And I've spoken about it heaps about Graham Smith, who, you know, I'd have been this coach trying to get him in an orthodox stance when he was 17, when I first laid eyes on him and started to do a little bit of work with him. And he resisted that, and he did it very politely, just as Kevin Peterson did when I started to do some work with him. If he didn't like something and it wasn't his preference, he would very politely say, thanks for that, Gareth. I think that I'm actually happier doing it my way, if that's okay, and away he went. But the 17-year-old Graham Smith is a good story, and it's comparable because he obviously didn't have his first-class career. He didn't have his test career to fall back on. He didn't have those successes to make the coach think, actually, we'll let him go because he's doing rather well. He was at a very young stage as well. So I would always go with the player's view and work with that. And to me, the key thing here is that the weight goes through the heels or through the rear part of the foot. The combination of having a wide stance with your weight across All of your foot or into your toes is one that won't work particularly for you. The idea of getting a wider stance is so you can sit back into your heels, and instead of leaning into shots, you actually push off into shots. So you use the ground forces to be able to move yourself in. And looking at somebody like a Peterson or a Smith or a Chris Gayle, for example, are great examples to look at for people that have wider stances that push off rather than lean in.
If you do have someone who you notice is leaning in, but they still say that they want to try a wider stance, how much leeway do you give them before you start saying, well, look, I think you might be better off if you try an orthodox stance?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't even put it like that. I would actually go, right, if I've got somebody who's into their heels and they're wanting to have a wider stance, I'll encourage them to hit with their chin up a little bit so they don't try and dip their head into it. And that will help them to get their natural movement pattern, rather than what they're doing there is having a wide stance because it feels good. And because we've always been taught to lead with the head and shoulder, they're trying to adopt that into their game. I'd go the other way and just say, right, what I'd like you to do is lead with your foot and keep your chin up when you're striking. And if they are somebody who works well with a wider stance, so they will find that they'll be able to make contact with the ball with good control by doing that.
And I guess a framework like that also takes into account things that we don't necessarily know about yet. I mean, you've talked about the different people lead with their foot and lead with their head, whereas in the past we've always talked about leading with the head in all circumstances. We've talked about the heels and different body positions and things like that. And I guess in the future, we're going to learn more things that we don't necessarily know about now. But the method that you've got there gives you scope to say, I don't have all the answers, so I'm going to let that particular person work out their own set of answers rather than assuming that one size fits all.
Absolutely, mate. And let's be honest, you know, however much we work with an individual, they're always going to know themselves hell of a lot better than we do. Mm-hmm. You know, they've grown up with themselves. They've been through loads of experiences that we haven't been through their eyes and through their sensations. So if you can talk to them in the way that they want to be taught, and if you can coach them in the way that they want to be coached, they'll end up going to a level which is way beyond our comprehension of that person. End of story.
Are there still things, though, that are, in your mind, not negotiable? Are there still areas where you think that no matter what, that's going to have to change as soon as you see it?
Yeah, I'd say the one thing that I find is I wouldn't even go to non-negotiable, but I would say that is more common than not,
right,
is that most people need to make contact with the ball late. There's a small percentage of people that can make contact with the ball out in front of themselves and be confident and competent in doing so. So somebody like a Peterson would be an example, or possibly a Joss Butler, I'm not sure, but possibly a Joss Butler on that, thinking back to my time with him, and a Watson and a Clark can make contact with the ball slightly in front of themselves and still be in control of trajectory and pace and power off of the bat. Whereas the vast majority of people that play need to make contact with the ball late. They might do it in slightly different ways from each other, but they'll make contact with the ball late. So I'd say roughly 75% of people need to make contact with the ball late. So that's, I wouldn't say it's non-negotiable because not everybody has to do it, but I certainly look for that first before I explore whether somebody has the capacity to hit the ball in front of themselves and still control it.
It's the old wait, go, go, go.
Yeah, and it's gonna, you know, that's my experience so far is that it works really well with most people. So if your starting point is that's fantastic, as long as you don't then ask somebody who's got great capacity to take the ball in front of themselves and control it to do exactly the same, because you're just working off of one model.
Well, Anaf, to go back to your question, the answer is stand with a wide stance if it feels comfortable for you.
Well, it is, but I would say experiment, and you might already be doing this anyway, but experiment with ensuring that your weight goes through your heels when you're in that wide stance so you can push off. And the way to do that is to flex your legs a little bit. And then secondly, that when you're hitting, just try and keep your chin up so the bowler can see your face whilst you're hitting the ball, as opposed to dipping that head down like conventional coaching manuals would ask you to do.
And learn how to be polite with your coach, but decline his option that he's given you.
That's exactly right. That's what the best have done over the years, mate.
Let's move on to the next question. It's from Amit. Amit says, "Sir, is it better to increase my bowling pace by practicing with a shot put?" I was going to say that the short answer is yes, there is a place for that kind of training when you are aiming to become a fast bowler. Now, it's perhaps not the perfect way of doing it, but when you're talking about throwing an implement which is not particularly large but is quite heavy, then you are going to be improving your body's ability to produce power. And then when we talk about power, we talk about moving weight quickly. And there's kind of a continuum of power, and it starts at one end where you're talking about a very heavy weight, which you can't move very quickly, but you try and move quickly. And then at the other end, you've got a very light weight, which you can move very quickly. And that would be, say, for example, bowling a cricket ball. So on the continuum, throwing a shot put is a little bit further down the line than bowling a cricket ball, because it's a heavier implement, but it's not as far down as, say, trying to do a one repetition maximum of a squat, which is going to be an extremely heavy weight for you that you're not going to be able to move very quickly. So using a shot put will give you quite a decent amount of crossover between the very heavy lifting stuff that you would do in the depths of the off season and the very fast movement power stuff that you do bowling wise when you're moving towards the start of the season. So if you're thinking about that continuum, you'd start with the strength and you'd move gradually through the strength speed end of it, through to the speed strength end of it, and finally to the cricket specific stuff, which Steph Jones has talked about many times before. So really, a shot put is not a bad way to go at all. It's a nice bridge between just purely being in the gym and just purely bowling. It's a nice bridge on that continuum.
Completely agree. I think you've pretty much nailed it there, and certainly looking at the stuff that Steph does, which I do, and I really admire, and we implement stuff off of the back of that at school and with our bowlers as well, because he's incredibly experienced at not just developing himself, but he's getting some great results with some players as well that he's working with. Mm. You've got the medicine balls, which is a similar principle, and he uses them very much from an explosive perspective. And what I like about the way that Steph talks about it is we talk about strength and we talk about power, but it's absolutely useless unless you can actually apply that. And one of the things about throwing medicine balls, or in this case a shot put, is that we can actually see, tangibly see, how we're applying our strength to become really explosive, because that's exactly what we're going to do when we're bowling. So I'm really keen on that. The other thing that I'm really keen on, again, it's something that Steph does, is bowling with weighted balls. Mm-hmm. And I've got a number of sand-filled balls, which are cricket ball shape and size, that you can throw, that you can bowl, that you can bat, so you can hit as well. And they are 1.5 times heavier than a cricket ball, 2 times heavier than a cricket ball, and 3-plus times heavier than a cricket ball. And what we'll tend to do with those guys is get people to bowl an over with those particular weights, or a particular weight, and then to bowl with a cricket ball. And you see that explosion in reality, because the next balls that they bowl with a cricket ball bang into the mitt. You know, when I'm taking it off of them, it bang into the mitt, and it's all working on that principle. So I love the idea of a shot put. The slight downside of the shot put, when you take it into your bowling, is obviously it's a different size ball, so the kinesthetics are different. Some people would say that that's a good thing, because you're developing the adaptability to be able to adjust grips and adjust the way that you apply your power. Other people would say that the more functional you can make it, the better. To be honest, my experience so far has been a bit of both. Actually, doesn't do too much harm to anybody. But I love the idea that you're looking to expand your own development by using different training methods, and would wholeheartedly encourage you to go to Steph's course on our website and pick that up, because I think that will help you to go even further in your game based on your natural preference and your, I suppose, your curiosity around this area of strength and power development.
To talk about the possible limitations of using a shot put, I would be careful about how you're using it if your sole aim is to bowl faster, i.e. you're not a shot putter. If shot putting isn't your other sport, then there's going to be limitations to that, because the shot putting season tends to be at the same time as the cricket season, and you probably want to be using those heavier implements earlier than the cricket season, in the off season, in the pre-season period, when you're moving more towards from strength into power. So unless you're an actual shot putter, if you're purely using shot putting to bowl faster, then you would want to use it at a different time of the season to when you were being an actual shot putter. And of course, shot putting is a very technical sport as well as a strength-based sport. You can't just, you know, go and chuck a shot put without any technical training. And if you're doing any technical work with your shot putting, and that's taking you away from doing cricket work, then that's probably not a good idea if your sole ambition is to be a fast bowler. If you want to be a shot putter as well, then carry on doing your technical work as well as long as you can, because there's no harm in playing two or three different sports for as long as you can, as long as that's something that you enjoy and you have ambitions in one sport or another.
I think you can use that shot put, I mean, in season. And the way that I'd probably incorporate it is to try and get some of the functional movements that Steph talks about. So you're pressing from your chest rather than just doing the shot put mechanism, and use it as part of an activation. So at the start of the day, you could do maybe a set of five maximal presses from your chest in a standing position, or you could throw it five times as part of your activation process to get the body ready for war, really. And I'd encourage that sort of use of it in season, rather than doing three sets of 12 or five sets of 12 or whatever the case that you'd be doing in that off season phase. So those sort of things, medicine balls and shot puts, can be used in season doing activation work.
Yeah, and I would add kettlebells to that as well. Yeah,
exactly the same. Yeah, exactly the same.
You can do all kinds of swings and things and snatches, cleans, things like that that are relatively safe to do, as long as you're not doing a CrossFit style thing where you're doing, you know, 10,000 reps of a snatch and you end up lying on the floor unable to breathe. But you know, if you're sensible about it and you're using it as a way to turn on those muscles that you're going to be using later on the same day, for example, then great. You know, a couple of sets of kettlebell swings or a few throws of the shot put before you go out to bowl, it's probably going to set you up quite nicely. So yeah, I agree with you there, Gary.
Joined with Adnan Sabri here at the Global Cricket Academy. Adnan's one of the lead batting coaches here at the Academy. Adnan, tell us a bit about your role and what do you see as an important element to a young batsman's progression? What do you work on here?
Batting, even any standard of game, I mean, batting, for me, is all about balance. When a batsman is batting, he should have a proper balance. If he has got the proper balance, then he can hit the ball with control and power. If he is not balanced, he cannot hit with power and control. So what happens, especially like, I'll give you an example. If you're playing a front foot drive, like, so what are the three key points for me? I mean, the feet should go towards the ball and play right under your eyes. And what happens, like for me, balance always, people say that how we know that we are balanced. I said, your balance is, you lose your balance when your back foot pulls out of the ground. So it's very important that when you are playing, so for me, there are three types of balance. Like one is the static balance when you're on the stance position. Second is a dynamic balance when you're moving towards the ball. And the third one, which I say that, after execution of the shot, it's called maybe a follow through. So that is also very important. So all three balances, so you should have all three balances in order to play a proper shot.
And when you're working with some of the players here, are there specific drills which you deploy to help this?
Yeah, it's really, I always emphasize on this sort of a thing, apart from the technical stuff like moving towards the ball and play under your eyes. But that is, they should see, for me, the player should know that what he is doing. It's very important for me.
And what's an example of a drill that you could explain that you do to help with a player's balance?
Yeah, well, see, I usually, what I'll do, if someone, I keep one cone between the feet or under the leg, between the legs of the player. So, and I always give him a task, like your back foot should not touch that while playing that one. So it is something very important, like, so this is the drill, because for kids, especially under 12 or under 13, they usually walk away from that crease. So for me, this is the best drill. I mean, if you keep any sort of a cone or anything, a barrier kind of a stuff between their legs. So that is, so just playing the front foot right without pulling their feet off the ground. So that really helps, and it really worked for me, especially.
Okay, thanks a lot for your time, Adnan.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Time for our weekly rant. We call it the soapbox, and this week it's Mark Garraway who's getting up to speak for a minute uninterrupted and without hesitation. So Garris, it's over to you. Your time starts now.
Well, this week's minute is going to be entitled why, and the reason why I'm saying that is that I got a great bit of advice when I first joined the England cricket team. Duncan Fletcher sat me down at the Taj Hotel in Mumbai. And he said to me, whenever you're going to do a coaching intervention with any of these players, because most of them are world class, I want you to ask yourself the question of why you're doing that particular intervention three times. And if you can give yourself three really good answers to those, then it's something worth sharing with that player. And actually, I've used that throughout my whole coaching, whether I've been working with a world class player or working with somebody who's just starting the game, like somebody that I worked with yesterday. And it's all about adding value. And as long as every bit of coaching that you do is adding value to that individual, then it's a good thing. But my barometer is to say to myself, why? And if I give three good answers, then it's something worth sharing with the person.
Okay, so we're packing things away for another week. But before we throw everything into our bag and head off for another week, we're going to do a couple of pieces of housekeeping, the first of which is, of course, the winner of this week's online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Anas' question about his wide stance, his wide batting stance, and we had Amit's question about shot puts and bowling fast. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go for Anas' question this week. I thought it was great to get some input from somebody who's quite young on how they want to stand. I loved the idea that he was leading his development, encourage him obviously to be really polite back into the to the coach, but also encourage him to find a way to work within his own preferences, which excites me to hear somebody 13 years old having an understanding of that and wanting to work within his own parameters. So that has won it this week.
And that's praise indeed from Gareth. If he likes the idea of you asking questions, Anif, then you must be doing the right thing. And Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show and have their question answered, and also maybe, just maybe, win that prize of the online coaching course, what would they need to do?
Well, they could give us a ring, David, on 0203 239 7543, or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also find our Facebook page on facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or you can head over to Twitter @pitchvisionacad, and I look after that. You can subscribe to this show. Head over to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. We're also available through any other podcatching program using our RSS feed, and that's fairly straightforward. Just go to pitchvision.com/academy. And click on the podcast link for all the details on what you need to do to subscribe in any device that you want to listen to us on. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.